Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is a city council meeting for November 24th, 2015. The time right now is 7 p.m. Ms. Smoot, will you please call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Hanford, Cuddeback, Rasmussen, Camp, Davis, Gamble, and Gearing.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen, will you please lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The first item that we have on this evening's agenda is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. Public comment is limited to 5 minutes per speaker. The first person that we have who has signed up to speak is Deka Smith. Ms. Smith, come up forward.
Hello, good evening. So I just wanted to take a moment of your time. I'm Deka Smith and new superintendent of Monroe Public Schools as of July 1st. So I just wanted to say hello, and I'm very excited to be an active member of the Monroe community now. And make sure that you know how much we appreciate the partnership between the work that the city is doing and the school district. One of the huge values within the school district is making sure that we develop relationships and partnerships on behalf of our families and kids. And so that has played out many times over in connections with the city. And so one very exciting piece of evidence for that is we're coming into the final completion stages of phase one of our new ball field. So it's like 99% completed. We just have a little bit more to do with the power, and what a fantastic opportunity for all of our families to enjoy top-of-the-line fields for any number of events. So the other thing I wanted to do is let you know that the school district will be engaging in a visioning activity end of next June, and so it's really important to us to get as much input and feedback as we can, so please be watching for a save the date sort of invitation. And essentially what we're doing is we're just kind of recrafting the vision and mission of the school district to make sure it's current and it accurately reflects the desires of families in our community. So
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I just wanted to add an answer to it, Pierce.
Thank you.
On the school board here, and wanted to just let you know how thrilled we've been already with the things that Deka has come in and done for us. And I just wanted to add on, I know you guys remember this, but just for the record, that we couldn't have done those ball fields the first time we were going to cut those ribbons without your really early and strong support. So you were one of the first entities to step up and donate to that effort, and that helped us get the grant from the county, and I think ultimately helped us pass the bond so that we can get the rest of the money. A little background on Deka, I thought you might like to know, and I know she doesn't want to say this herself. She comes to us straight from Puyallup, and in Puyallup she was the chief academic officer. In Puyallup they're about three times our size, and they've got three high schools, and each high school has a feeder stream. So it has five elementaries, two middle schools, and that feed into the high school, which is about exactly what we are here in Monroe. We have five elementaries and two middle schools. And she was over, that was her direct responsibility. In her past, she also started, before that, she was up in Meridian, and she started an alternative program that looks a whole lot like our Sky Valley Education Center, so she's had that direct experience. And then in several other experiences, she helped rebrand their school district. And one of the things that she did, I thought was most, one of the reasons I hired her, is when she was in Marysville, they were having trouble getting the children from the tribes, all the parents to come to parent conferences. So she piled her whole school on a bus, and all of her teachers took them to the longhouse and met all the families in their own setting. So just a person with amazing instincts, and I think we'll fit here in Monroe. The whole school board says we're happier every time we see her. So welcome to Deka Smith, our leader to take us into the future.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the next person that we have who signed up to speak is Trisna Tanis. Ms. Tanis, please come forward and state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, honorable council members. My name is Trisna Tanis. I'm 11201 Southeast 8th Street in Bellevue. I'm legal counsel for Heritage here on your behalf. I've asked you before, and I'm asking you again to stay consistent with your prior decisions and actions and adopt the these Monroe ordinances tonight. The scope and concept for the SEIS are appropriate. This is a non-project proposal. The SEIS specifically responds to the board's order. I want to touch on one more thing. I know I just want to be brief on this, but last week you received a document with a lot of different signatures of people who disagreed with this proposal. Regardless, as you, some of them live in city proper, but many of them do not. But regardless, as you all said last week, it is good to see public participation in this process. So even though some people don't want to have this property rezoned as general commercial because of a variety of personal reasons, from they'd rather see an open field rather than have something developed there, or any other, they don't like change, or whatever the reasons may be, it's important to recognize that this council has said over and over again that those personal reasons do not trump the fact that this proposal is indeed consistent with the city's comprehensive plan, it's consistent with the GMA's mandate, and it would help accomplish what the city has said it wanted and has decided what it wanted. As noted in the council's findings, this proposal is consistent with land use policies and goals that are in your comprehensive plan. The desire for higher urban use, the promotion of economic and commercial development, and transition of the city from rural town into a city of regional importance with sustained growth. So with that, we urge you to follow through and be consistent with your prior decisions and actions. Do right by Heritage and what is good for Monroe, and adopt these Monroe ordinances tonight. Let's complete the process and go before the board in compliance with its order. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Is there anybody else who would like to come forward to speak this evening? Please state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
Ashley Sellers, 2093 Barrow East Ridgemont Drive. Y'all should remember that now. I am going to be a little all over the place tonight, but that's okay. So last week, there were lots of people here, and one of the things that I heard said is, this isn't about the rezone. This is about the EIS. But that's really not a true statement. When the Grounds Management Hearing Board said this back, it essentially vetoed your decision. And so what you voted on and will vote on this week is whether to move forward with the rezone. So that, yes, it has to do with the EIS, but it's not the EIS that we're voting on. It's whether the City Council still chooses to move forward with that rezone. I heard two of you last week say, I've been waiting for somebody to say something that will change my mind, something besides your view, which I'm sorry, I'm so tired of hearing you say it's about the view, because there's so many other arguments that we have presented besides you. And so I'm going to go back to the landslide issue, because I find it interesting that this isn't of more concern to you all. Because this week when I was reading the city budget, because I'm more interested in this city than just East Monroe, I see this graph that says citizens of Monroe, and then you all beneath it, and the people you represent. And I happen to be a citizen of this city that I think could be a great city. And I think my safety and other people's safety is of utmost importance when you're considering something. And so the landslide issues, you all say, experts. They're experts. And to that, I say that there was a slide in December of 2013 in Index. The experts came out, they sat down with the people, and they said, quote, Scott and I met with local residents, Tom and Lynn, to discuss the landslide condition. This does matter, I'll tie it in. They asked my opinions as to whether the slide would likely continue to move onto the road. I indicated that this local slide represents one of many in the area, However, the large amount of movement that has occurred on this particular land site has decreased the driving forces substantially, and additional major movements are not likely. However, not even 30 days after that report from geotechnical engineers, might I remind you, that's the same that we're calling experts on Mars, then another major slide happened. And that slide continues to happen today. And initially, it was actually a deep slide that they didn't recognize. So when we take expert information, I think that's great. But I can tell you, my husband's a biomedical engineer, and he's an expert. But they tear that apart. And I would encourage you guys to, too. This is public safety we're talking about. And geotechnical engineers, in response to the Planning Commission, wrote some things down. It's not necessary, nor do we always have the opportunity to visit off-site areas to view the top of a slope. Yet in their original report, they state, because of lack of access permission, it was not possible to determine if surface water runoff and storm drain facilities discharge the slopes. Therefore, it is not possible to evaluate how runoff in the ridgetop area presently affects erosion and therefore slope stability. So in that, they're saying that because they didn't have access, they weren't able to fully determine what slope stability was. I presented you with people that said, hey, I'll have access. I'm not saying don't ever move forward, but I am saying do the research. Take another 2 weeks. Do the research from up top. Because what I would like to say is Geotech stood here and said, slope shouldn't be draining. People shouldn't have their drainage going there. Well, City of Monroe, you guys have your drainage going there. The runoff from your water goes into that slope. And so if we're going to say you're making it weaker, then you guys are making our slope weaker as well by not providing a different area for drains to drain. I just really, when I hear you guys say, I haven't heard something compelling to question, I just can't help but question, what about landslides and not fully doing your research isn't compelling? What about the citizens that live here is not compelling? Because honestly, whether you live in the farm, there's places all over this city that are up for landslide hazards. And to propose doing movement and not address that is a huge issue to me. And there's cities all over the place in hot water for this. Everett's in hot water for this. There's a city in Utah currently dealing with this. And Index is still dealing with this same issue. So I'm begging you to look at that, and I'm also submitting pictures of the property for flood for this week, because it did, in fact, flood. And the slope tripled in size. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Is there anybody else who would like to come forward to speak? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on to consent. Council? Councilmember Hanford?
Move to approve the consent agenda as listed.
Second.
Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Cutterback. Any discussion on the motion to approve the consent agenda? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you. We'll now move on to unfinished business. This is unfinished business item number one, AB 15203, discussion 2015 comprehensive plan update. Mr. Osaki.
Let you move before I blind you.
Sure, thank you.
I just blinded.
Amen.
Feel the love.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, next Tuesday, the council holds a public hearing on the comprehensive plan as recommended by the Planning Commission. And I just want to tonight give a little brief outline of the Parks and Recreation and Open Space chapter, which is Chapter 7, and also the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space plan, which is Appendix F to the comprehensive plan. Keeping in mind that the intent was to give this presentation last week, but because of the late hour, I decided not to. But in doing that, this presentation was actually going to be done last week by Parks Director Farrell and myself, and Parks Director Farrell is not here tonight. So I'm going to go through some of the planning type background information, and then Director Farrell asked me to just, there's a couple slides in here, he asked me just to provide to the council and identify where in the parks plan you can find the information, and then he'll be here next week for the public hearing in case you have any questions. So, again, the comprehensive plan, the general comprehensive plan has 8 goals. One of those goal statements relates to parks. That's goal 7. Very general statement about providing parks and civic facilities, recreational opportunities. and arts and cultural activities on pace with need, growth, and long-term objectives. So the idea behind the parks goal is that the city provides parks facilities consistent with the need and growth of the community. Now, the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Plan, which is Appendix F to the Comprehensive Plan, is pretty consistent with most Parks, Recreation, and Open Space plans in terms of format that you'll see with other communities. There's an inventory of existing parks and trail facilities. A level of service standards is established for parks and trails. A needs assessment, so it takes into account workshops, community surveys, and that type of information to develop needs or identify needs. And then it identifies future projects. And in this particular plan, it identifies projects that are identified to be constructed during a 6-year period, and also identifies projects out to a 20-year period, out to 2035, and then also costs and fundings over that 6 and 20-year plan period. And these next couple of slides, we have to do a little bit of math here. So in terms of existing city parks and trails inventory, this is what is right now. Pages 20 and 21 of the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Plan Appendix F will detail these and actually itemize the parks and itemize the trails. But just in general, right now, there's 14 parks in the city, 207 gross acres of parkland, and these are city-owned parks facilities. Of that 207 gross acres, 62 are developed, and 145 acres are undeveloped. And in terms of trails, there's 12 trail segments currently in the city, comprising or consisting of 14 trail miles. So that's what exists right now. And so the Parks and Recreation Plan, and working with the Parks Board and taking into account all the public involvement, establishes level of service standards for parks, and it establishes a level of service standard for trails. And for parks, the level of service standard in the proposed plan is 4.75 developed acres per 1,000 population, and for trails, it's 1 trail mile per 1,000 population. And what that means is, in terms of need by 2035, the 20-year life of the plan, there's a need for 108 developed acres of parkland and 23 miles of trails. So that's not necessarily new. That's a combination of what exists now and what's needed in the future. The next couple of slides will talk about that. And that's based on the 1,000 population is based on a 2035 population of almost 23,000 people. And that excludes the population, obviously, in the correctional institution, because you would not expect them to put demands on our trail system or park system. So it accounts for that. Now, in terms of parks, 2035 need, in terms of how we get to what we need. Again, total developed parkland needed by 2035, based on that level of service standard, 108 acres. And so existing, of that 108 acres, the existing developed parkland is 58 acres, which basically means there's a need for 50 additional acres of developed parkland between now and 2035 to meet that level of service standard. And of that 50 acres, what the parks plan says is that the existing undeveloped parkland that the city currently owns can provide 35 of those 50 acres, but there's actually going to be a need for 15 new acres of developed parkland. So that 15 new acres needs to be acquired over that 20-year period to meet that level of service standard. So that 50 acres in the future can be met in part by the land we currently own and developing it, but it also needs to be met in part by acquiring 15 new acres.
Okay. Before you move on, I've got a couple of lights here. Councilmember Kent.
Thank you. Could you define a developed park? I'm trying to picture like the dog park we have down by the river.
Oh, well, the developed park would not include, for example, parks with natural features. It has to actually be can be developed and put to a use where people can actually take advantage of. So it has to have some type of activity with it. It doesn't necessarily need to be a ball field, but it can be a trail or something like that. So it has to be something that people can access and use. I know that's
so just an open space doesn't constitute as developed.
Oh, it could, but like some of the park area that might include the river, where actually maybe the river is part of the actual geography.
Right.
That wouldn't necessarily be something that could be developed for park purposes. It's almost like dry land. It has to be dry land that can be developed.
Okay, but what I was thinking of, for example, the dog park. I mean, it has a developed section.
Well, dog park would be
a developed, that would be a developed park. Yeah. And then basically an empty lot that had access for people to use for playing ball or something.
Right, and actually if you actually, if you go to this, if you get a chance, go to this inventory on page 20 and 21
okay.
of the parks plan, and it'll itemize.
Okay, I'll
it'll itemize it pretty quickly.
All right, thank you.
Councilmember Hanford?
Yes, I was just wondering if the Cadman property is included in that existing undeveloped parkland, or if it's not included in that yet.
Good question. I think it's, I think, but I can ask Director Farrell to verify next week that it's included as undeveloped.
That's
that can
fine.
Be developed.
Thanks.
I'm pretty sure it is, but I'll have to verify that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so this is kind of the math for where we need to go to get to 2035 in terms of parks needs. Same logic for trails. 2035, actually the math on this is great, this is really easy. So 1 mile per 1,000 means we need about 23 miles of trail, developed trails for the 2035. Currently we have 14 miles of developed trails. It means we need 9 additional miles by that time period. And this next, just the last two slides is where Director Farrell asked me to, if you get a chance to take a look at some of these pages. Within the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Plan, there's a 6-year capital improvement plan. So it lays out and identifies the projects that the city hopes to accomplish over the next 6-year period. And included in those are renovation to existing park facilities, Curry View, Lake Tide, Lewis Street, and Sky River Parks. The master planning and acquisition of the special use Cadman Park is included in the 6-year capital improvement program, and that includes coordinating a portion of the Centennial Trail extension to Sky River. Master planning processes for Lake Tide and Sky River Parks are included in that 6-year capital improvement plan. Centennial Trail markings from Stanton Meadows along 179th to Park Place Middle School is included. And then there's, some of this is already taken, but coordination of the Monroe School District on development of all-weather fields and the Centennial Trail extension at Park Place Middle School. So if you look at the 6-year capital improvement plan on page 78, these projects will be listed. That 6-year capital improvement program, it goes by year, so you'll be able to identify where these particular projects are programmed in what year and their cost also. And then just finally, the primary sources, the funding sources for funding parks, facilities, general fund, park impact fees, real estate excise tax, and grants. Again, there's a table, identifies a 6-year period, and it identifies the different projects and the funding sources for those projects over that 6-year period and how projects will get funded. So Director Farrell said to take a look, especially at the 6-year plan, because that kind of gives you a sense of where the city wants to go in the near term over the next 6 years. But if you also look at that section of the plan, it lists out projects over a 20-year period as well. They're just not programmed out in detail as a 6-year plan. So that concludes the presentation on the parks plan. Just kind of gives you a general ballpark in terms of how to work your way through the document. And again, the Planning Commission recommendation, you'll be holding a public hearing on that at your Tuesday meeting. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any other questions, Council? All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Osaki.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is to discuss the survey results. This is unfinished business number 2, AB 15204, discussion, solid waste contract survey results. Ms. Nelson, thank you.
Okay, let's talk trash.
She's been waiting all night to see that. Waiting all day to say that.
Good enough.
Huh?
Delivered.
Okay, right now we have, we operate solid waste as a utility, contract with Republic Services, and we have a contract with them that will expire in August 31st, 2017. And depending on which direction council wants to go, that's why we need some time before that to make a decision of which way we want to go, because some options take a lot of time, some do not. To help guide council in this decision-making process of what to do about the garbage services, you asked for a customer service satisfaction survey. We hired a firm, keep it objective and professional. They did a report. It's attached to your agenda. It's in your agenda packet. And I was pleased to see that overall people are pretty happy with the garbage service and pretty happy with their City Hall customer service. So it was generally favorable, which is kind of nice. So that could help you, guide you for whatever it's worth in your decision making. There are four options before you on the agenda bill, and we're looking for a direction from council on which direction staff wants to know which direction you want to go in, and we will pursue whatever you decide. First option would be to allow the contract to expire at the end of August of 2017, and then turn it into, instead of operating as a utility, operate as a franchise, in which case the city would not govern the rates, but the WUTC, Washington Trade Commission, would, Utilities and Trade Commission, would govern the rates. That's how it's handled for people in unincorporated county. It would be operated that way. And with the benefit to the city as a franchise, as we in granting the franchise agreement, it would be non-exclusive, so other companies could compete. And we could also say, in return, we want free services for municipal facilities, which you're not allowed to do with a utility. So that would be an option. And with the franchise, you can do either mandatory service or non-mandatory. On all of these options, right now the city does impose mandatory services. With any of these options, you can either continue with mandatory services or non-mandatory. The difference being, while it's bundled in with the water bill right now, if it was not, then we would pursue it through writing citations and other means, other legal means to make people comply, whereas right now we just turn their water off if they don't comply. So it's just, we would use a different hammer, so to speak. So those mandatory or non-mandatory, totally up to the council, whichever way you want to go. So there's the franchise, or you can remain as a utility. As a utility, there's certain legal things like you have to treat the city like any other utility customer. We don't get any special deal. And with the, as a utility, we can keep the current contract as is, keep going. We can negotiate a new contract with if you want any changes to the existing contract, or we do a full-blown RFP process where we go out and ask requests for proposals from all vendors and see who responds. My guess would be Republic Service and Waste Management. And so I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. Whatever you need to help guide in your decision.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, I appreciate all the info in the packet. I mean, you know, working for a couple different service companies, I mean, when I'm looking through and I see, I mean, I know the very satisfied was like in the 70 range or 80, but when you add that with satisfied, I mean, all of it was over 90 plus percent.
Yeah.
I mean, most would kill for that.
I was surprised.
Yeah,
to tell you
it was that feedback was really good. I think the other component is we look between, you know, hey, do we want to entertain the idea of maintaining or staying as a utility or going the way of the WTUC managing it. I think one of the things we got to take into consideration that I read in the survey data is that, correct me if I'm wrong on my line of thinking on this, but the feedback from the citizens was they like the city doing the billing.
That was in the survey, yes.
That was one of the things they liked. It was one of the higher things.
And that, yeah, even as a utility, you could have them do the billing or us do the billing.
Right, but if you're doing it, if we were to go the way of the WTC,
we would not
be doing the
billing. Yeah, we would be out of the garbage business.
Correct. So that's one of the things I wanted to make sure that we all understood as a council is that, you know, that if we chose to look at that, we got to remember that we're looking at survey data that says that they that would be in conflict with what the survey data is telling us. So that was eye-opening for me because, I mean, obviously all of us remember when we found out that, oh, shoot, we're not getting this free service, you know, anymore when we made that switch. You know, that was one of the things I was looking for, you know, as potential, well, hey, maybe we should take a look at that this time around. But to see overwhelming data that says, no, one of the things we appreciate the most is the city handling the billing, that definitely leaves me any other, you know, to stay as a utility. You know, the service interruption stuff that we had previously, I mean, I'm very happy with the relationship as it is now. I feel completely engaged with the partner that we have now, making good on, you know, whatever transgressions that were for the snow incident of whatever year it was. What year was it?
2013.
Look, there you go.
Labor.
Labor-ish.
It was labor. I like to call it the snow incident, okay. 2013. but, yeah, the incident of 2013 that, you know, I think got the point across, and they've been a very engaged partner ever since. You know, I've had two years of, you know, sustained engagement and a lot of the stuff that we've done. So I've been very happy with that. And then in light of some of the survey results that we're seeing, I mean, me personally, I'm leaning more towards staying the utility route so that we still handle the billing based off of the survey data, and then to continue that partnership, because in addition, I mean, obviously it's a pretty big expense to go and do an RFP that process again. So if it ain't broke, yeah. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. And I agree with those comments. If it's not broke, don't fix it. I'd be along lines of 2B, I think, as I'm looking at these. I certainly think I'd like to renegotiate, but I'm specifically adding those things based on the snow incident. And when they miss a day, they come out the next day and do it, not waiting a week to come out and get the garbage, which is what happened last time. Then everybody's stuff just piled up. Everybody's unhappy. And they have been super responsive since. I mean, we were really upset, and they've really responded to that. We let them know we were not happy and that there was an issue here. And so I do appreciate the way that they've responded to us. I'd be leaning towards option 2B at this point with that, being able to keeping a utility, keeping us doing the billing. I don't think we don't want to open that can of worms. Nobody likes getting an additional bill, even if it means your utility bill goes down. It's just another piece of mail that comes. And then the labor disruption, inclement weather, add something to that effect in there. That'd be my preference. Thank you.
Councilmember Kadebeck.
Thank you. Diane, thanks for pulling this together. It was helpful because I was one of the council members that was suggesting we take a look at this because it's such a huge amount of money. Mm-hmm. The contract, it's a big contract, and we usually do it for 7 years. So,
yeah.
Couple things I noticed as a survey. So, high level of satisfaction with the service. I was surprised, like you.
Yeah, because you always hear from the complainers.
Yeah.
So, people that are happy, you don't hear
from them. Also surprised because not a high use of the community spring cleanup, but the people who do use it were very satisfied. So I would suggest in the future that we look at some way of getting the word out or getting more people to use this, because it seemed like the people who did use it was like 91% were really satisfied. So I think that could be something we work on over the next few years. I might be reading the data a little bit differently than Councilmember Gamble. I looked on, it's on page 9 of 68, so maybe you could help me with this, Diane. On the bottom of it said, when asked whether they preferred the city continue to be responsible for billing or the Republic Services become responsible for billing, respondents chose the city 38%, slightly more than Republic Services, 29%. So I looked at that as kind of, it didn't matter much to people, but then in the next statement it says among private residents, majority 63% preferred the city. And then business customers seem to have no preference or the city continues. So there just seems to be a disconnect there.
Kind of ambivalent, yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't see it as an overwhelming, I mean, it sounds like private residents chose that, but then when I see it above, it says respondents in general, it was just slightly higher. So, but to go back to the utility and the franchise, I think the issue I had with maybe looking at it had more to do whether it was mandatory or not, and you cleared that up in saying that it can be a utility and be mandatory, non-mandatory,
mm-hmm.
Correct?
Yeah.
And in my head before, I was thinking a franchise was could be non-mandatory, and utility was mandatory, but
that's up to you whether it's mandatory or not, no matter which way you go.
Sure. So
to go back to the utility, if we were to look at it being, we had customers come before us and had the complaint or the issue of, I'm not here for 6 months and I'm still getting charged for my garbage. And I have a, you know, I understand about evening it out and having a set fee, but then I have a little bit of issue of people aren't using the service and still getting charged for it. So that was my issue of looking at more of not utility or franchise, but more looking at mandatory, non-mandatory. So that's something I might want to look at just to be able to serve people a little bit more fairly and whether they use the service or not. With that, that would be more something I would look at. And if we were to negotiate a new contract under 2B, because currently it's mandatory, and I would suspect that garbage contractors like it to be mandatory.
Oh, yeah.
So that's our
argue that the rates are lower if it's mandatory because they're guaranteed the rate.
Exactly. So that's something I guess looking at is having that discussion of mandatory, non-mandatory, and how that changes the contract and what that looks like for fees and stuff. But I was one who was looking like we should go out to bid, but after looking at this data and kind of reviewing, I would suggest, same as Councilmember Gearing, maybe it's B, but also having a question of do we do mandatory, non-mandatory. But I agree, if customers are satisfied, we have a good relationship with them, the city works well with them, and if we can have a negotiate a good price and also look at the issue that we had before with the stoppage of work and handle that. And at least take a look at whether we do mandatory or non-mandatory, because that was the issue I heard from the residents was.
And that is also something you could negotiate.
Exactly. So that would be the only thing I would look at more than franchise utility. So those are my thoughts right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, I'm glad you point that out, because it actually would be where, I mean, private residence, I'm interpreting that as residential residence, which is our probably the highest number of interactions that we have on the sewer or the garbage side of things, correct? Yeah, so I mean, when I look at, because I see what you're saying around 38% over a Republic service on 29%, that was in the aggregate of the sample size.
Yeah.
But when you look at the
private,
which is a majority, to me that's overwhelming. And even though you may think 38, to, I mean, still almost 10 basis points in any survey, in my opinion, is pretty statistically significant. And billing is always the A number one. trust me, pain point. And I think the other thing, I mean, it popped for me, because if anytime you close a local billing location where people can go and talk, or if they have the option, they can go and talk to someone face to face, as opposed to, you know, over the phone or whatever the case may be, that's a big deal. So that would, I mean, if we were to entertain the idea of not being a utility, and that's the only other thing I was going to say in regards to your recommendation on 2B. There was a comment in there on 2B about going away from city doing the billing. That's why it is the crazy. Yeah. So I would eliminate that
exactly.
From 2B, and then I would be for 2B.
I think that was had that war there.
Just right. Yeah. Just admit the war.
Keep it with the city.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Great. Thanks.
Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. I remember the citizen that spoke about the usage while they were gone, things like that. Diane, how practical is it for the city to notice there's absolutely no usage, like a house, the usage dive bombs? How practical is it for us to catch that on the city level? And then maybe just address those concerns. I'm just thinking like a one-on-one type.
We would have to go out and look at people's garbage. So as from the city standpoint, we're strictly the billing agent and the phone customer service agent. So we would not know.
I'm sorry, let me just clarify. So I mean, I'm not thinking specifically just the garbage. I'm thinking the water usage.
Oh, yeah,
there should be something pretty noticeable.
But if people contact us, you can structure it however you want. You can have a policy that says if someone's going to be out of town for, you can say a minimum of 2 months or 1 month or however you want to structure it. If you set the policy, we can enforce that. We can do that.
Okay.
And we have the capability to handle that as well. Because right now we do have the vacancy policy. If you're going to be gone 3 months, 3 to 6 months, you can have your water waived and your sewer waived.
But not the garbage.
But not the garbage, because we contract with Republic that they're going to get that guaranteed revenue.
Yeah.
And so, but if we're renegotiating a new contract with them, we can change the policy.
Yeah, I would be willing to second that as far as looking into it. Mm-hmm. Only in those options, you know. So the Republic Services knows that we're not talking about just anybody. They'd have to be, you know, they'd have to come in and notify the city.
Yes, they notify.
Go through all the hoops. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm in agreement with everything that's been said so far.
Okay. Okay, without objection, then I'm understanding that it's council's consensus to follow 2B, essentially with the following amendment. So keep solid waste as a utility, negotiate a new contract with Republic Services. This could contain language for contingency service plans, labor disruptions, and inclement weather, but also to add in looking into mandatory versus non-mandatory service. And it sounded as if I heard from consensus that we did not need to explore the option of moving customer service billing from the city to the solid waste vendor. So without objection, that'll be staff's direction. And I thank you very much.
And also have a vacancy policy in there too?
Wasn't that the mandatory versus non-mandatory?
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. Then I thought that's the answer is yes.
Thanks, Dan.
All right, we'll go ahead and move forward to the next item on the agenda. This is final action. I'm sorry. Why don't we go with new business? New business item number one, AB 15-205, ordinance number 017-2015, amending MMC 1304, water regulations, and MMC 1308, sewer regulations for first reading. Mr. Feilberg.
Thank you. As you may recall, back in August, I brought to the City Council a series of questions regarding what the outcome of the utility rate study was, and the City Council directed staff to prepare an ordinance to implement those, and that's what we're doing right now. So basically, this ordinance is to base the water bill on meter size only, not on the number of units that are attached to that unit. So basically, you pay a certain amount for the meter size and then consumption after that. We reduce the stability of the revenue by reducing the revenue received from the monthly base charge from what is currently 68% to 40%. We reduce the fire suppression system standby charges, and we increase the revenue by 7.5% overall annually for the next 8 years. So, Mr. Mayor, would you like to take questions on each utility or do them all?
Yeah, I think that would be great. Sir, are you finished with the water?
Yes, that's all for water.
Perfect. Are there any questions on the water utility? Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, I just had, and actually, I'm going to cheat already. It's for both. Brad, I just want to, sorry, because I'm just looking at the definitions below. I'm assuming class of user when we're looking at, because it's all based on units.
Correct.
That's just speaking to sewer only, because if I'm reading.
Right, because it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter on the water.
And the water, well, it does. There is a place that matters, but for residential, it doesn't matter that if you were a single-family house
right.
or a fourplex.
Right.
You have one water meter, you get paid for the water plus however much consumption there is.
It's based off the size of your water.
The size of the water meter, correct.
Okay. So then that's a change from
that's
current.
That's a change
today.
From current, yes.
Okay. Got it. That's what I was getting confused when I was looking down in the definitions. I assumed that you meant just for the sanitary
system. The reason that the units is in the definitions of for water is also because for determining whether or not it's a residential or non-residential. So if it's a commercial building that has some residential in it, even though it has units in it, it's still counted as all commercial. So that's just, there's that little nuance there.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions on the water / slightly sanitary sewer? Okay, Mr. Fahlberg, please continue.
On sanitary sewer, eliminated the volume rates for single-family and multifamily customers. So basically, they just pay a flat monthly fee based on the number of units. We equalized the outside city multiplier to be 1.5 for all customers, just like it is for water. We set the level of fixed monthly charge for multifamily customers to 7/10 of a single-family unit. So if a duplex pays 1.4 times a single family. We reduced the usage allowance for non-residential customers from 1,000 cubic feet per month to 500 cubic feet per month over the next 3 years. And we're treating mixed non-residential / residential customers as non-residential.
Any questions on the sanitary sewer? Councilmember Gamble.
So just remind me on the... setting the fixed monthly charge for multifamily customers at .7 ERU per unit. What was it previously? Just a reminder.
It was one.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Okay. And I guess the only, you know, the question I have on that is why would we, I'm trying to remember why we would be different in that as opposed to on the water side.
From their studies of the consumption, they figured it matched better based on just doing a flat monthly rate for sewer, and then multifamily didn't use quite as much, so that's why it's smaller, rather than doing the actual water consumption, because you know that the water that's used for water is actually water that's used, and it's not necessarily a one-to-one correlation between how much water comes in and how much sewer goes out. That's why they...
Right, no, I get that, yeah. But what I'm looking at, though, is that if you are, let's use your one by your fourplex example that you used, you're just basically paying for the utilization of water that is consumed in the home based off of the meter size.
That's right. Yes.
Right. But and there's not a, unless I'm missing something, the fixed monthly charge for on the water side, is there, there's not a fixed monthly charge on the water side.
Yes, there is. You pay your base fee for the meter.
The base fee for the meter.
Right.
Is it at 0.7 or is it at 1?
That's, well, are you in water or are you in sewer?
I'm cheating again.
Okay.
I'm back in water.
Okay, yeah, back in water. There's no 0.7.
There's no 0.7.
You pay the base monthly fee for this meter.
Okay.
And $5.05 next year for every 100 cubic feet over the yield, for allowance of 400 cubic feet.
Okay.
No matter what's downstream, because that's how much water you use.
Okay, got it. The and the reason why I'm, you know, because the we're measuring by, so there's no unit measurement on the water. On the sanitary sewer, eliminates the volume rates for single family and multifamily. The problem I'm dealing with is if you have a 1x4, they're going to pay that base charge for all four dwelling units.
No. For water or sewer?
For sewer, sorry.
Yes,
back
for sewer.
Yeah.
So a fourplex will pay 2.8 times the amount as a single family.
Correct.
Right.
And then on the water side, they're just going to pay for the 1 meter.
Right, but it assumes they're using more water, so they're paying more.
But it's based off of usage.
It's not because that's
my question. Why would we base the one off of usage and the other require the, even, you know, a 0.7 for each one plus usage?
Because their studies show that there's not an exact correlation between the amount of water that comes in and the amount of sewage that goes out. And they figured it was just easier just to charge a base fee for sewer.
But for a multifamily residential, there is no usage. It's just the base fee.
For sewer.
For sewer.
Yeah.
For sewer?
For multifamily. Yeah.
For multifamily. It's just the base fee.
Just the base fee, yes.
Okay. Okay. As a first reading, I'll probably have more questions.
Yep.
What's that? No, yeah, I'm just trying to, I mean, we're making some changes. I want to make sure I understand them. I hardly understand my own bill, so I'm trying to use this as a lesson for myself.
Thank you. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. Brad, question on 2E. So treating mixed non-residential residential as non-residential. Can you remind me of that discussion? I was just, why, okay, did we agreed to that? I'm just thinking, you know, we've done this, we got this West Main Street plan, we want to do a bunch of mixed use and stuff out there, and so we're going, somebody lives on top of you know, the pizza shop.
Right.
And so we're going to, because there is a business there, we're going to call it non-residential, even though there's a
if you look at the ordinance, the ordinance is based on meters. So they really want to do residential separately. You get a meter for the residential units, and you get a meter for the commercial units.
And in the case that they don't, it will be treated as non-residential.
Because right now we have the problem with, as things come and go, this week there's 3 apartments, next week, and then someone turns it into an office, now there's only 2 apartments.
Okay.
It's very confusing for billing and whatever we should be billing them.
No, and I understand. I appreciate that. Thank you. I'm good. All right.
Okay. Councilmember Gamble?
I think I got it. I was, so the eliminating volume rates, that's eliminating the usage.
Correct.
Got it.
Yeah.
That's what I needed. Volume usage.
Okay.
Got it.
Okay. Any other questions on water or sewer? All right, stormwater.
Okay, and the last one was stormwater, which really didn't do anything with the ordinance. That's basically the fees resolution, which is coming next week, or 2 weeks. We just increased the revenue by 4% per year annually. So.
All right, any questions on the stormwater? Okay, Councilmember Hanford.
I'll move to accept as first reading, ordinance number 0172015. Amending Monroe Municipal Code, Chapter 13.04, Water Regulations, Rates and Charges, Chapter 13.08, Sewer System Regulations, Modifying the Utility Rate Structure, Providing for Severability, and Establishing an Effective Date.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Gamble. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion passes 7-0. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is new business item number 2. This is AB 15206, ordinance number 018, 2015 amending MMC 2012, transportation impact fees for first reading. Mr. Feilberg.
Yo.
Once again, back a ways. I think it was in August also. No, actually, this one was in September. We discussed the peer-to-peers transportation study that's part of the comprehensive plan. The city council had decided to use a corridor level of service rather than an individual intersection level of service. So, and then we also decided that we were going to use the base projects and the contingency projects and also the completed projects that we've used money to increase the capacity of certain intersections, and we will still be collecting money from future development to pay for those improvements that we've already made. So we get that information to peer-to-peers. They came up with the rate study and decided how to divvy up things for new development. And that is what's in the ordinance. And it is basically, scroll here. So basically, a single-family house or a duplex would pay $3,449 per unit. Multifamily would be $1,966 per unit, and then we also laid out the fees for other different uses. Also, in the study itself, it better defines what the different uses are, so that when someone comes in, we can give them this and say, this is what we're going to charge you, as opposed to them kind of having kind of guess what they were classified by the city for their development, because the previous one was a little vague and it said, well, and then we'll just decide what to charge you if you're not on the list. So we've expanded the list so that it is more clear to people that when they come in, what they're going to be charged. And then also, they also have the option of doing their own transportation analysis, fee analysis, to determine if they would like to suggest to the city that they be charged something besides the base fees. And there's any questions that we have to answer that.
Thank you. Any questions, Council? Councilmember Gamble.
And it does appear that, so we did remove, so a single family, one or two dwellings, it looks like we did remove the ADU $500 traffic impact fee that we had on the previous schedule.
Yes.
So that would fall under the single family, is that
yes.
correct? Great. Thanks.
Any other questions, Council? Okay, is there a motion? Councilmember Davis?
Sure. I move to accept for as first reading ordinance number 018-2015, amending Monroe Municipal Code Chapter 20.12, transportation impact fees, updating and revising the city's methodology, rate structure, and schedule for imposing transportation impact fees upon certain development activity, affecting various housekeeping amendments, providing for severability, and establishing an effective date.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Davis, a second from Councilmember Gamble to accept his first reading. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you. We're now going to go on to the next item on the agenda. This is final action. Number one, AB 15207, resolution number 022-2015, establishing parking restrictions. Mr. Feilberg.
Thank you. There was a request by the owners of the businesses that are located in the building just north of the alley, north of Main Street, on the west side of Lewis Street, just turned into Papa John's or something like that, or Daddy John's, restaurant for some reason, to have a 15-minute parking space in front of them. That came back, or 30-minute parking space, but council looked at that and said, please ask them if they'd like to have a 15-minute instead to be consistent with the other parking spaces we have downtown. We asked them if that was okay. They said it was. So here's the resolution that has that first parking space north of the alley being a 15-minute spot.
Councilmember Cutterback.
I'll make a motion to approve resolution number 022-2015, establishing parking restrictions in the city of Monroe and repealing resolution number 13-2015.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Cutterback, a second from Councilmember Camp. Any discussion on the motion to approve the resolution? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is final action number two. This is AB 15208, ordinance number 015-2015, East Monroe Comprehensive Plan Amendment, and ordinance number 016-2015, East Monroe Zoning Map Amendment, final reading. Mr. Osaki.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, ordinance number 015-2015 would, if passed, approve the comprehensive plan amendment for 43 acres of property from limited open space to general commercial, and ordinance number 016-2015 would, if passed, approve the zoning map amendment for the same 43 acres of property from limited open space to general commercial. The ordinances that you have before you tonight both contain an Exhibit B, findings and conclusions. Those findings and conclusions basically are the same findings and conclusions, except that you have a substitute Exhibit B tonight before you, and I just want to spend a few seconds going through what the changes are in that substitute Exhibit B. And these tend to be, well, they are very, very minor changes, but I just want to make sure that I just let you know what they are. And as is typically the case, or often happens when you put together a document this big, as soon as it goes out, you realize there may have been some typos and items like that. So a couple of these are typos, and a couple of these items were also typos brought to our attention from the applicant's counsel. So I'll go through these very quickly, and I'm not even sure you need to follow me, but if you, I'll just say the page and what the change is. Sure. And if for any reason you have any questions, you can certainly let me know, and then I can direct you to the specific section. But on page 11, there is a word of, and it should be or. So it just says no technical studies or analyses, and before it said of. That's just a typo being corrected at that particular page. On page 31, there is discussion of the preparation of the final supplemental EIS and how the September 27, 2013 final EIS has been adopted by reference into the supplemental EIS. And actually, it's a jargon issue. The correct term is incorporation by reference. So rather than say the September 27, 2013 final EIS was adopted in the final SEIS, it just says incorporated by reference. On page 33, there was reference to the professional qualifications of firm Wetland Resources, and the way it was written, it says we are equipped and licensed to perform fish surveys, and it just makes more sense to say the firm is equipped and licensed to perform fish surveys. And on page 40, there was a typo in the word stream. It said steam, so we put an R in there, and so that typo has been corrected. And then finally, on page 42, there's a reference to the September 27, 2013 final environmental impact statement, being adopted by reference into the final supplemental environmental impact statement, and really the correct CEPA word is incorporated by reference. So it just says, it now says, which also incorporates the original September 27, 2013 FEIS by reference. And that would be it. And so the recommendation is contained in the agenda bill, and I'd be glad to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay, and please note that under requested action, there are two motions that are identified because of the revision to the findings. There is a revised set of motions that refer to substitute exhibit number B, or letter B, rather. Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Osaki. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. I want to say thanks for these the findings and conclusions. This is like the gold standard of findings and conclusions. So I just want to say well done. Again, I want to say thank you to all the public participation and all the things that we said last week. I'm not going to repeat all of them, but I am appreciative. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and make two motions, the first of two. I'm going to move to adopt ordinance number 015-2015 relating to comprehensive planning, amending the land use designation of certain property located north of US 2 near the eastern city limits, commonly known as East Monroe area, from limited open space to general commercial, adopting supportive findings, setting forth and effectuating the city's compliance approach to the Central Puget Sound Growth Management Hearing Board's determination of invalidity and finding noncompliance in CPSG MHB case number 14-3-006C, providing for severability and fixing a time when the same shall become effective.
Just a second.
This one.
Yes.
Add the piece after the end of where you left off.
And to include the substitution version of Exhibit B findings. So I'll be looking for a second on that.
Second.
Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Gehring. It's okay. And I have a second from Councilmember Davis. Any discussion on the motion to adopt A with those changes? Councilmember Gamble?
Yeah, I just state for the record, I'm going to be voting in opposition as I have since 2012, 2011, since I've been on. I'm going to steal a line from those that disagree with me on this and say I have seen no compelling evidence from 2011 to change my mind that this really is in the best interest of the city to change this from limited open space to general commercial. I still don't see that. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
I would echo that. I find no compelling reason to disagree with the Planning Commission's recommendation to not approve by a 5-2 vote. Reading through the findings and conclusions, a couple things. I just want to get on the record. I've mentioned before, but just to kind of go through the findings and conclusions, some issues that I have with this document. If you look at 5.7, I don't agree with that statement that the City Council also respectfully disagrees with the Planning Commission that the changing circumstances do not exist to justify the proposed comp plan amendment. I do not agree with City Council on that. I do think that limited open space is the best land use designation, as I mentioned before. I don't see commercial designation as a good fit for that. Other issues I have with this document are 5.9, which is on page 13, where it states that the council is saying that it does not adversely affect public health, safety, or welfare in any significant way. I find fault with that statement. I don't think it meets that criteria. We've had testimony and documentation about the slope. I don't think issues were addressed there. I had issues with the flood height documentation where the consultant, the expert, was technically kind of manipulating the data, not using the IFS data, because he found them to be technically wrong, but that it's not recognized by FEMA how he adjusted the data. So I find the issue with the flood height. I find issue with the LIDAR detection and not having maybe a clear data that supports the LIDAR topography. The other issues I have, if you look at the next page on 14, where it talks about 5.10.2, it says within which urban growth shall be encouraged and outside which growth can only occur if it's not urban in nature. I don't believe that the urban growth that we are suggesting for that area is compatible for the land surrounding it. If you can continue on, I don't think, if you look at 5.10.5, where it says provides for increased commercial development that will diversify the commercial base of Monroe, enhance the character of major traffic corridors in the downtown, and provide opportunities for neighborhood commercial centers. I don't think it meets that. I also don't think that it talks about locate new commercial development near major traffic corridors, parking areas, and enhance pedestrian circulation. It definitely won't meet that. If you look on page 16, where under 5.10.10, it talks about which promotes commercial developments that are economically feasible and provide active focal points in the community. I don't think development there will be consistent with that. I believe that the best alternative is to leave it as limited open space. To continue on, I think on page 27, where it talks about public facilities and services, ensure that those public facilities and services necessary to support development should be adequate to support the development at the time that development is available for occupants and use without decreasing current service levels. So I think there's going to be an issue with the facilities, the public facilities out there. And then on page 31, under 5.14.3, where the statement says, additionally, the development allowed within the East Monroe area under the current LOS designation is not as valuable or desirable to the city from a land use planning standpoint as the uses that would be authorized under general commercial classification. I find that statement to be incorrect. And then on page 33, under number 5, it talks about the no action, no development scenario. And if you look on page 34, it states the city did not follow ecology's recommendation to more accurately portray environmental impacts in the FEIS by adding a true no action alternative as a baseline using existing undeveloped site conditions. So I find a problem with that. I could go on for a few more, but I think I'll stop there. Obviously, I find issue with the FEIS. The proposed development or changing that into commercial is not compatible with the land around it. It does not meet the criteria that were set out by us to change that designation. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. I will be consistent in my vote on this and not be voting in favor of it. Again, it really comes back after hearing the consultants come and given this landslide risk of 40%. And I understand that he played this off as low risk and shallow slides, but as I said that night when they presented, scratch out a ball enough, it's going to make a hole. And really, 40%, no matter how you look at it, is still high. Yes, I understand it's below 50%, but 40% risk is still extremely high. And, you know, we're talking about safety. And, you know, I just don't believe enough has been done to disprove that. So, you know, some of the comments I heard last week that kind of stuck in my mind, wanted to look at a little bit more was, by changing this from limited open space to general commercial, it's going to be attractive in our city because we're going to have more commercial land it's going to have a higher value. And coming from the banking world, I reached out to a few of my realtor friends, even as late as tonight, and just asked what happens when there's overabundance of inventory. And all I heard was, at best, it might keep prices where they're at, but it certainly doesn't increase them. So I don't see where the value is there by having more commercial. I mean, I think we look at our own property, or look no further than our own properties to prove that. The other comment that I heard last week that stuck with me a little bit was, it needs to move forward so we have an answer. Well, sure, but does it stop there? I mean, as we went around the table last week, I think every single one of us expressed how long they've been on council and how long they've been discussing this. And, I wonder if, back 10 years ago when it was being discussed or however long we started discussing it, are we saying we need the answer so it's going to end then? And here we are several years later and we're still discussing it. Getting this answer, sending this forward, is that going to give the final answer? Is it going to end there? So, question. I mean, if you think it's going to end there, then okay. But I don't believe it is by going forward with it. So, again, I will continue to vote no on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. I appreciate the input from the citizens about the landslide concern. This is a non-project application. When we receive a project application, there will be mitigation to address those concerns and others. I appreciate the Plan Commission and the staff for all that they've done, the time and effort that went into the process of responding to the Growth Management Hearing Board. I appreciate the extensive deliberations held by council over the last several years, and I greatly respect everyone up here. We don't always agree on everything, and there are times in life when people just have to agree to disagree, but that doesn't affect my appreciation for everyone up here. So that's all.
Thank you. Okay, there being no further discussion on the motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Okay, the opposed, Gamble, Councilmember Rasmussen, and Councilmember Cutaback. Councilmember Gearing? Oh, the vote was 4-3. Sorry. Councilmember Gearing?
Thank you. I move to adopt ordinance number 016-2015, amending zoning designations in the East Monroe area from limited open space to general commercial, setting forth the effectuating the city's compliance approach to the Central Puget Sound Growth Management Hearing Board's determinant of invalidity and finding of noncompliance in GPSGMHB case number 14-3-0006C, adopting supportive findings, providing for severability, and fixing a time when the same shall become effective, and to include the substitute version of Exhibit B findings.
Second. I have a first from Councilmember Gearing. I have a second from Councilmember Davis. Any discussion on the motion? Councilmember Cutaback?
For my reasons previously stated, I will not be voting yes on this motion.
Thank you. Any other discussion on the motion? Councilmember Gamble?
Ditto.
Sorry.
Okay.
Thank for you. The record, ditto.
For the record, ditto. Okay. Any other discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Let the record show the vote was 4-3 with Councilmembers Cutaback, Rasmussen, and Gamble voting against. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is Councilmember reports. Councilmember Gearing.
Next, I'd just like to say I love the lights downtown, all the stuff that's going on downtown, cleanup, downtown association, work with the chamber, all that stuff looks great. Looking forward to small business shopping, small business Saturday. A lot of good stuff going on, and I love seeing downtown all dressed up. And I also wish everybody happy Thanksgiving. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
First off, happy Thanksgiving. to everybody. I hope everybody's power's back on and utilities are good to go. It's been a very interesting week for those of us that are work in that space. And I just ask that, I don't know if any of you guys have family in the Spokane area or whatever, but we were talking about it before. Just thoughts and prayers with the Spokane folks and talking with the Avista utility company over there, the 126-year history that they've been in, you know, servicing over there. It's the worst storm they've ever had. Winds over 70 miles an hour. We've got a ton of technicians and folks that we've shipped over to that side of the mountains on, you know, for just for cable and internet and all that type of stuff. People that are working through the holiday to make sure that you know, people have services and stuff like that. So that is that. The other thing I wanted, there's a football game that's coming up on this Friday. That's kind of an importance that I can't believe we didn't at least touch on. It would
you
be
that's a good for you.
That's the Apple Cup. Great to see the camaraderie, you know, around town. And I don't know if anybody noticed, but there's a certain flag that's flying over the Lakeside Gravel. It's the UW flag, right? For those that are not familiar with, it's a charity thing that's done every year. This is the second year running. The Monroe Public School Foundation does it. For those that didn't get to participate this year, you can still go in if you want to throw money towards scholarships for kids. And
we'll see who wins the game.
Monroe School. Oh, geez. Talking, huh? But it's great. They raise you know, money for scholarships for kids, and that, you know, you pledge towards the Cougars or towards the Huskies for the Apple Cup, and then the flag flies above Lakeside for the week. Just like to point out, it's been the dog's flag both years that's up there. So great, the Apple Cup after Turkey, which is great, and then the Monroe Select Basketball has kicked off. We've switched gears from football onto the other. Both boys and girls have already kicked into fall tournaments and making trips out of town, and the games will be happening in our backyard here very, very soon. I think that's it.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
Just happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Thank you. Councilmember Camp. I was going to call you Gamble. I was going to say Gamble. Councilmember Camp.
Hamilton. Or Gamp.
Camp.
Camp.
Gamble.
Oh, whatever.
Camp.
Had an opportunity to go to the Downtown Association meeting on last Thursday night with the mayor. Really interesting. They have a lot of enthusiasm, and they are putting together quite a few plans. I'm really impressed, so I hope to see more and more things happening downtown. Speaking of which, things happening downtown, I was volunteered to help Saturday morning, and had a great time putting up the lights. I am absolutely shocked at how well it turned out. I'll admit, I wasn't that impressed when we were putting the lights up, when the mayor was forcing me up the ladder to plug the thing in. But it turned out beautiful. If you get up on Main Street and you just look down, it's beautiful. I really am impressed how well downtown looks. I have to give one special additional credit. Well, everyone who turned out and helped on Saturday, thank you so much. It really made a big difference, and it made life a lot easier. There's no way that we could have put all those lights up just on our little three-man team and all the support. I have to give some credit to Mrs. Mayor, to Laura Thomas, who cracked the whip when one certain mayor and one certain council member were whining there were too many light posts that we had to put up. I was taking lights and dropping them at the base of the lamp saying, go over there and put them up. And that's my report.
Thank you.
And happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Oh. Last Wednesday, just incredible job by city staff and public works out there cleaning up. They're behind the club. There was no Sky River Park. It was just a giant pond. It was incredible. But got to, you know, see the crews out there all day long cleaning stuff up, fixing, turning up the trees, getting them out of the way. It was just an amazing orchestra out there. So kudos to the staff for the work that they've done and continue to do. I know there's still more work to be done, but good job. Happy Thanksgiving, and go Huskies.
What? Oops.
Councilmember Cutterback.
I'm a Coug.
Sorry.
Sorry on Saturday or whatever day, Sunday. Happy Thanksgiving, and attended the Police and Fire Appreciation last Friday at the fire station. It was a good event, and so thank you for all your service. Police and Fire, we couldn't do it without you. Keep our community safe, so I really appreciate it. And it was timely last week with all the power outage and the flood and all of that flood. We really recognize how much work you guys do and appreciate it. So I did make a crack about donuts for the chief a little bit, but a couple cracks about the chief. I'll let him cover that maybe.
You got the eyebrow raise on that note.
I'm not feeling 100% right now.
And the eyebrow.
I'll shuffle.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, just very thankful to be able to serve with everyone up here, and have a lot to be thankful for, and just keep that in mind as we go into this holiday. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. Staff, thank you for all your work.
Thank you. Out to staff, Mr. Worthen. Okay, Ms. Nelson. Mr. Osaki.
Well, I sent Director Farrow an email about your questions, not expecting an answer, but only so I wouldn't forget to ask him the questions, but he replied back. So just real quick.
Sure.
Chapman site would be considered acres that could still be developed.
Sweet.
And an undeveloped park or portions of parks that could still be developed. Example of a portion of existing parkland that was developed during the last 6-year plan was Dog Park and Rotary Field, both of which were prior undeveloped acres when the Sky River Park.
Councilmember Gamble?
Yeah, I guess the only question I had on that, is it a part of the 35 that's already identified in the presentation as undeveloped potential, or is that an addition to the 35 that is that already showed there? Because when he was asking that question, that's what I was thinking in my head.
So now I got to go back to the slide. And
yeah,
so
and the only reason why I'm asking that is because another part of the slide on the plan, it said Cadman acquisition, like it hasn't transferred yet. So I would just be interested to see the acre, if that's acreage in addition to the 35 that's already not underdeveloped, then that's a good thing. It would be a good thing. I would like to know that.
Okay. Since Mike's on vacation, I won't send him another email. So
yeah, what's he doing? He's supposed to be in his cabin in the, off the grid. That's what he said, right? Off the
grid.
Thank you.
Councilmember Gehring has a question, too.
And for the life of me, I can't remember it, so we'll move on. I just had a question and totally skipped it. Wasn't that important. All right, we'll move on.
Okay. One more thing that happened related to community development. There was a holiday bazaar that was to occur at the Marketplace, or the Hall at Marketplace. This is the old Eagles building. Staff became aware of the proposal of the bazaar, which was to include the basement. And as many of us know up here, there are issues with that building and ADA accessibility. And I guess there was a fire back in the 90s or something like that that I guess reinforced concerns about having uses in the basement. But the city became aware of that, I think, on Friday?
It was like Thursday afternoon.
Okay, and I became aware of it right at 5 o'clock on Friday. I understand that bazaar has been moved, but it's just one of those things with communicating with new people that are leasing that building. The building owner's been made aware of the situation, so this isn't new news to him. And I understand that it was a sublease, I guess, from the existing primary lease, lesser. So anyway, I'm happy to hear that they were able to find another place to hold the holiday bazaar. I did reach out to Molly Daniels on Friday night to talk with her and let her know that it wouldn't be bad to continue trying to find another location, but that if we had anything new to report to her, we'd get back to her around lunchtime on Monday, And I had noticed by Sunday night that she had already found another location. So I think that's at Cascade Church, and I'm happy that they were able to open their doors to her for that. But again, it's something that we understand the building owner is aware of, and the lessor, now the primary person that's leasing the building, is now aware of that. Anything further, Mr. Osaki? Okay. Councilmember Gehring?
Thanks. I remember we have annexations, at least that are on the docket, some things that we've been talking about, although we haven't talked about it here for quite a while. Some of that is some pretty broad swaths of land. If there's nothing on them now, are those areas that could be designated once they come into the city as undeveloped park space or targeted for developed park space? I think the area all the way out to even Ingram was within the UGA and potential. I'm just curious if areas like that could be with nothing there as they come into the city, if those are areas that we might consider, since it's, you know, this 20 years, by 2035 we need to have this, right? So quite a bit of area in which some of that acreage might be able to be made up.
So your question is, can you designate areas outside of the city?
Once they come into the city. Because it has to be in the city for it to count towards parks.
And the answer is yes, but let me look at that, because each plan designation is going to have certain criteria, and I need to, you would want to make that judgment or decision based against the criteria, and potentially, I would feel a little uncomfortable, because to some extent what you might be doing is designating someone's private property as a park. And if that's what you're thinking of doing, we need to give that some careful thought.
And now, if you know, private property is private property, I don't know what areas would be eligible for that. And my question is, with some of these areas are quite large, there might be some target properties within there that aren't actually in the...
Typically what a plan might do is draw a big circle and say we have a future need for parking in this area.
Right, and that's
defining specific properties.
And when I'm looking at the UGA, it goes clear out to almost to Ingram in a couple spots. You know, I'm thinking there's a circle that could go there, but anyway.
Okay, we'll take a look at the park plan and come back.
Okay, yeah, just, thanks.
Okay. All right, anything further, Mr. Osaki? Chief Quincer?
Well, I need to address Councilmember Gamble about the flying over a gravel pit. I think the University of Washington needs to celebrate something this year, because they certainly haven't been celebrating, so more power to them. Unlike the University of Oregon, but I regress. Anyway, the last week, was said, was the celebration for Police and Fire Week, and we are, the Police Department, and I know the Fire Department too, is very thankful for the wonderful things that were presented to us, such as more food than we could ever eat. But I know there were some people, I was gone most of the week, but there were some people that certainly tried to eat every bit of it. So, but we really appreciate the thoughts from the business community, from the churches, pastors, schools. It was just a wonderful celebration last week for us. So, the second thing I have is tonight, in another and a half hour, is the graduation for the Assistance Academy, and this was a full class, and things went exceedingly well until last Tuesday night, when everybody lost power, so they can't
and
they're trying to work in some of the information they're going to have last Tuesday night tonight, so maybe a little later, 9 o'clock, like I told you, Mr. Mayor. So.
Okay.
But that's all I have.
Okay. Thank you, Chief. All right, so last week was a very busy week for me. I on Wednesday morning, I came in and took a tour of the flooded areas. The waters had already started to recede. They were down about 3 feet from the height, so I was able to actually drive down into the upper parking lot behind the Boys and Girls Club. But the water was very high right up into the parking lot of the Senior Center, the lower part of it. At its height, you imagine that the white fences and everything that are out there around the parking lots, they were completely submerged. Water came up into the garages of the Terra Street apartments. We then went ahead and took a tour of a couple of the other areas in town, flooding over at Al Borland Park. I did inquire about people living in Al Borland Park and understand that that we're pretty certain that people were not in the park at the time that the flooding occurred, because the last of the people that we knew that were there had relocated themselves after the last flood. That was in October. Also went over and took a look at the motels, the motel units over just past Sam's, where there was water up to the doors of some of the motel units there. Then Thursday came in and had been receiving a number of phone calls in front of, including a council member, expressing concern of, that's a really nice word, expressing concern about backups on 522 for a second day in a row on Thursday. I came to understand that the stoplight that was out at Paradise and 522 on Wednesday had been repowered with power generators for Wednesday night and into Thursday morning. However, they were not working on Thursday morning. And the frustrating part for me is that the hot lanes had their power generators to keep their signs up, but nobody had come out to take care of the power generators where we have 3,000 people from Monroe city limits alone commuting down to the east side using most likely 522. I made a phone call and spoke with Cameron out of Senator Pearson's office. I asked him to be patient with the shaking in my voice because I was not very happy, and he got right on it. They were able to restore power by about 10 o'clock. Unfortunately, it was after the AM commute on Thursday. The rumor is that either somebody forgot to get out there to fuel it or somebody stole the power generators. I'm still interested to hear which, but that was Thursday. The other thing on Thursday afternoon when I got into work here, I learned about the closure of Highway 2. Media reports at the time that were citing communication with DOT indicated that Highway 2 would be closed east of Skykomish, quote, indefinitely. And the Seattle Times article that I was looking at said, yeah, if you want to get to Stevens Pass, go down I-90 and then over Blewett Pass and all this other stuff. And that got me kind of upset, too, second time in a day. And I hopped on email and sent messages to Senator Pearson, Representative Scott, Representative Christensen, and Congressmember Del Bene's office to express our concern about maintaining this critical corridor. By Thursday after, and I did get responses from most of them, Congresswoman Del Bene called me while she was getting on board an airplane to leave D.C. and let me know that she'd fill me in by first thing Friday morning. But by the end of the day on Thursday, I learned that a plan had been in place and that it would be restored to two lanes by Christmas. By the time Friday afternoon got around, we were down to where we are right now, which is two lanes should be open by tomorrow morning. So I'm very happy to say that our delegations, both state and federal, and also DOT, pulled together to make certain that we would have access, two lanes of access over the pass from Monroe to Leavenworth, where, you know, one gets beer and brats. In addition to that, on Friday, I toured Housing Hope's Monroe Family Village with Congresswoman Del Bene, Senator Pearson, County District County Council Member Klein from District 1, which is Marysville and Arlington and Stanwood and Darrington, and also with school board member Nancy Truett Pierce. So we walked through the Housing Hope project. There are over 100 dwelling units here in Monroe of affordable housing that Housing Hope has put in, and that is that's a tremendous number of units. And everybody should appreciate that it's everything from single family to multifamily, and the Monroe Family Village here has something special in that they've got a place to teach people skills, soft skills and also hard skills, and then there's a spot out in front where they can put in a cafe or something like that. They can train people, and then they can go ahead and serve people there in front and gain job skills. So Councilmember Del Bene heard a pitch from Housing Hope, and a pitch really isn't the right word, but you know, some expression of concern about losing funding to different programs that allow things like Housing Hope to groups like Housing Hope to do projects like that. Saturday morning, I spent with Councilmember Camp and the Monroe Downtown Association putting up lights. We went back out that evening, and the lights look great. So it really brightens things up out there, and it's great. Last night I went to the cold weather shelter and got trained to do cold weather shelter work, and then I came in this afternoon and did some work following up on the Highway 2 issue. I should add that we came back here to the office on Friday with Del Bene and Pearson to talk about 522, and it's really early to make promises or anything, but I know that Del Bene is going to work on her end about trying to bridge gaps across legislative districts and whatnot, and Pearson's going to do what he can also to try to put widening 522 from 2 to 4 lanes, where it's 2 lanes right now, somehow into the budget. So they are working to make something happen, which I really appreciate, and so that's where that is. I think that's it for right now. I hope everybody has a great Thanksgiving, and this Saturday is Light Up Monroe.
Yeah.
And so you'll see in Monroe this week, you'll still get Monroe this week tomorrow, the schedule, and then it'll also come up. You see stuff pop up on the Mayor Facebook page occasionally. Those are pre-scheduled things, so it's not like I'm at work sending those up. Those are pre-scheduled things, so you'll see something pop up, I think, on Friday if you want to look at the schedule there, or it's on Choose Monroe. There are a lot of activities happening in the downtown, but the lighting is going to be over at Travelers Park this year, it's something that Chamber's putting on if they want to move it back to the downtown next year, which there have been comments about bringing the lighting ceremony back to downtown from different folks. That's something the Chamber will go ahead and assess after this year, I think. Shop Local is also on Saturday, so I encourage everybody to shop local. The other thing too is, if you're going to buy something, try to buy it here in Monroe first. So if you can get it at Fred Meyer or Walmart or wherever, rather than going to Alderwood Mall, it'd be great if you could encourage your friends and family to buy here first. That's a lot. Does anybody have any questions for that? And then we'll go over the extended agenda and the agenda. All right. Gene's out the rest of this week. He's on vacation. We'll just run through these really quickly. Public hearing on the proposed comprehensive plan. We'll have the Downtown Monroe Association here to give a presentation. Comments from citizens. Consent agenda. Just items on there. Unfinished business. You've got the H30 cable wakeboard at Lake Tai Park coming back. We've also got the lobbying firm selection, so we'll have that for discussion and selection. Under new business, we've got the 2016 budget adoption for first reading, and then the 2015 budget amendment for first reading, and then we also have adopting a comprehensive plan for first reading. Under final action, we have water regulations. You saw that tonight for second and final reading. And then we have the transportation impact fees for final reading also. Flipping over to the extended agenda. You can see what's going on there. A couple of highlights. Number one, on December 8th, we have recognition of service. So if you can be here at 6:30, we're going to be recognizing the boards and commissions. We will have cake and just sort of a reception, and then we'll open up our regular meeting at 7 o'clock. We'll have a confirmation of new board and commission members. And I think we only have one library board member that's leaving, so we'll have a certificate for that individual if that person's here, and that's because of an end of a term, either for term limits or they didn't want to do another term. And then currently we have items on the December 15th meeting, and we are looking at the swearing-in ceremony of newly elected officials either on December 15th or December 22nd. So we'll give you more information, I guess, on December 8th on those items. Councilmember Hanford?
Yes. I see on the 22nd the final reading, possibly for the Eagle final plat.
Yes.
Is there a necessity to have that done before the end of the year, or?
No, talking to staff earlier today, Mr. Osaki, can Eaglemont wait till January? I'm understanding from other staff that may be the case, that it could.
It is, but the answer is yes, except that it's a matter of customer service.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And trying to accommodate the customer and developer. It's desirable and possible to do it in December.
Okay. Is it possible to have a decision made on December 15th?
It's an ordinance, so if you wait, if the council's comfortable with it and decides to waive second reading, certainly you could.
Okay. So that would be your answer. If council wanted to waive second reading, you could do that on the 15th. I know that I talked with staff earlier today about trying to make the second and final reading on the 15th, but timing didn't allow for that. Yeah. So if council is willing to waive final reading and take it on the 15th, then yeah, you can do that.
Okay. If we can get the information as soon as possible, then I feel comfortable with that.
Okay. All right, so we'll be looking on the 8th on whether or not you want to cancel the 22nd, and we'll try to get some additional information about such that you can vote on the 15th on that, okay? All right, and if that is the case, we'll move the recognition of service for elected officials that are leaving and newly elected officials to the 15th. All right, Councilmember Camp? Councilmember Camp?
Thank you. References for the lobbyists?
They did call them. There will be notes in your packets that will be coming out tomorrow about the results of those. And I believe that your scoring sheets, Liz, will the scoring sheets be in the council packets tomorrow night too?
The packet will include a matrix of the scores from each council member and an average score from all seven council members. And yeah, we didn't want to include each individual. It would just make the packet really, really huge. But certainly, if anybody wanted to see those things, as in the public, they could ask for that through a public records request. So.
And he was asking about references. So I'm understanding from Pam that there will be notes in the packet.
Also, as an attachment, will be notes on the five references called for each of the candidates.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anything further? Okay. Councilmember Gehring?
Thanks. I'm just curious about why we are moving to swearing people in before the new year. It's never been done before except for your swearing in 2 years ago, and I understood that because there's the mayoral decisions to be made before there's a meeting. Council members don't make decisions except at meetings, so that's mm-hmm. different. Just curious why the change this year from years past.
Yeah, so the reason for that, first, even though they would be sworn in either on the last meeting or 10 days prior, and they do have the ability, just like I did, to come in or go to any place where there is a notary and swear themselves in. That's what I did. I didn't do it in a meeting. They have the ability to come in at the last meeting of the year. and be sworn in. They don't begin service until January 1st. The benefit to them being sworn in where they're not expected to serve that evening is that they, unlike me, my parents were here for my swearing in, my ceremonial swearing in here. I wasn't able to go and celebrate with people for the swearing in. So having the ability to get sworn in a public space before the end of the year allows them to be able to go and celebrate that moment. So again, they won't be able to make any decisions before the end of the year, and if they want to, as I stated, 10 days prior, they can go to Staples, in quotation marks, if they have a notary there, and get sworn in on their own. So it just gives a public swearing in, it's ceremonial, and they can go off with their friends and family to celebrate that moment. Now, those of you getting sworn in for your next terms, a little different, you'll still be expected to work that evening. So, that's the thought process there.
Okay. No, I appreciate it. It just takes a little bit of fun away from the first meeting of the year. You know, everybody comes, and that's in the past, all the friends and family have come that night. I understand people still have to work, so very good. I appreciate it.
Are there any council members that feel differently about having the swearing in at the last council meeting of the year?
I'd like to see it at the beginning.
I have the same question, but now you've explained, it makes great.
It's fine.
Sounds good.
What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to celebrate things.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I'm doing this year that did not happen to me when I left council is roasting the outgoing elected official.
On a spit.
So I don't know how it occurred after I left council, but my last council meeting of the year, I received a coin from the chief.
The chief.
Which I still have, but there wasn't that opportunity for celebration. And I'd like to have the opportunity for celebration, which is why we're doing the boards and commissions next in 2 weeks, which is why we're doing an onboarding and an offboarding process. Again, it's a moment of celebration.
I like it. I appreciate the explanation.
Yep. Councilmember Gamble?
I just on the 8th, I will be, unfortunately, with the, I know the recognition is 6:30, I'm going to be late. My youngest has a choir concert that I cannot miss. So
understood.
I'll be here probably around 7:30.
Okay. Sounds good. Councilmember, we'll go ahead and note that in the record. Councilmember Rasmussen?
I just wanted to point out, back to the swearing-in ceremonies and dates changed.
Yeah.
I got to celebrate my swearing-in ceremony night with a marijuana hearing. So
that's correct.
No, I'm not, but yeah. Just throw that in there.
Okay. Any other comments on the extended agenda? All right. There being no further business of the city this evening, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
I'm sorry. Was there something else?
There is. There's one more.
Okay. Oh, thank you. The health board. So real quick, Councilmember Rasmussen, please update the members, because you called Mayor Guzak.
Yeah, sure. So in Mayor's request of anyone interested in serving on the Snohomish County Health Board, gave a lot of thought, reached out to Mayor Guzak, who currently represents Monroe, and we both agreed that Monroe is certainly big enough that we need our own representation, and expressed my interest in it, and she was supportive of it, and I in turn thanked her for representing Monroe for at least the last 2 years, and then contacted Mayor Thomas and expressed my interest, and here we are.
Yeah. And I've already sent off an email to, or had an email sent off to the other mayors and administrators / managers up and down the valley. Mayor Eslick is the only one that I've heard from. She was fine with it. She understood that Mayor Guzak was prepared to do it, and I'll follow up with her. But she was fine with Councilmember Rasmussen serving in that role. Councilmember Camp.
Do we need to take any action on this?
Should there be a motion from the council supporting his appointment to that position?
Usually,
I believe it's completely up to council, a general consensus or a motion.
Councilmember Camp?
I'd like to move that we put a minute order recognizing the change to Councilmember Rasmussen for Snohomish Health Board.
I have a first from Councilmember Camp, a second from Councilmember Gehring. Any discussion on the motion to support Councilmember Rasmussen on the Snohomish Health District Board? Okay, I have a number of lights. Councilmember Gehring.
Thanks. Awesome. And a great opportunity to meet a lot of the players in the county. One of my friends, Councilmember Sam Lowe, who's going to run for county council, he was the chair on there. And just a great opportunity to meet council members, meet a whole bunch of people from different cities. So make the most of it. Have fun in support.
Councilmember Cutterback.
The way that it was set up for representation on that board previously is Monroe had its own representation. I sat on that before, and it was because Monroe was big enough to have its own representation. When Lake Stevens became population size bigger than Monroe, they have their own representation. Because it's a limited number, it's all the county council members and then the biggest kind of cities in the region. It's Snohomish, Monroe, but we're grouped together and we have one representative.
Thank
you. I'm not going well tonight. So if she's willing to not serve and him take, so it's not both to be served, we have to choose someone from our cities. Okay, I just wanted to make sure that was understood. So Mayor Huzak is ready to give up her spot, or she's willing to not contest. Or
yes, that's what I'm understanding.
Okay.
Yes. Councilmember Rasmussen. That's
awesome. I'm guessing I probably need to recuse myself from.
No. Okay, Councilmember Camp?
Well, I'm waiting until after the motion.
Okay, I've got one more item that this just reminded me of. Okay, all those, there's a motion on the table. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. One more thing. This afternoon I got an email from Snohomish County Cities asking if I was interested in serving on the PSRC's Economic Development Group. I said yes, and so that's going to be subject to a vote of the Snohomish County Cities in January. So one more reason why I'd like as many Monrovians there as we can get to help support that, but we do need to make certain we have a voice at the table at these, so that we can make certain we get funding for projects like 522 and everything. Okay, that being all for business this evening, Councilmember Camp.
I move that we adjourn.
Thanks.
I have a first from Councilmember Camp, a second from Councilmember Gamble to adjourn. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you very much. Have a happy Thanksgiving, and thank you for your service. We're adjourned.
Don't forget.